So welcome, everyone, to the December 1st, 2021 9/11 and Other Deep State Crimes teleconference. Let's see. We don't have any minutes to approve. Craig and I are working on the backlog of those, so hopefully we'll have some next month. And are there any objections to the agenda that went out as written and shared? Okay, hearing none, then the agenda is approved, and we'll start with the roll call. Craig, you want to take the roll call?
Sorry, get back to the right page here. I apologize. I should have been ready for that. I'm just on the wrong. Okay, here we are. Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, Barry Zwicker. Hi, Barry. Kat McGuire, Dan Hannon, Fern Tishman, Carl Golovin, Leonore, is that the right,
yes.
Is that the full name? Okay.
Yes.
Peter Ketchum, Richard Gage, let's see, second page here, Sunny Maynard and Xander Arena. That's who we have
Hi.
So far.
Did we miss anyone? Guess not. Okay, great. Thanks, Craig. Okay. So we're going to start then with our first guest, which is Kat McGuire, who is known by most of you. Like Craig is going to introduce her. So, Craig, take it away.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Oh, my gosh. I thought it was all organized, but I'm not. Okay. Here we go. Yeah, Kat McGuire, she's a long-time participant in this conference. She's been a grassroots activist for over 30 years, focusing on anti-racism, ecofeminism, environmentalism, anti-war, animal rights, pro-Palestine, the truth movement, and now the freedom movement. She organizes conferences, rallies, and lightworker circles, as well as contributes intellectually as a writer and analyst. Sometimes referring to herself as a right-brain activist, Kat's vision for humanity is to transcend duality and attain a spiritual politic and political spirituality. So we had Kat on not too long ago, and she did a great presentation, so I'm looking forward to this one tonight. So take it away, Kat.
Okay, and Kat, I'm just going to put us in lecture mode, if you hang on one second. And then I'm going to unmute you. Let's see. Okay, Kat, you're all set.
Okay, great. Thank you, Cheryl and Craig. I'm honored to be here. And my talk has to do with comparing my years as an activist in the leftist movement with what it's like being in this new movement, what I would call the freedom movement. So what my learnings are, things that I've discovered, because it is definitely a lot of differences. I, as a longtime activist in the truth movement, which is where I believe I got inoculated, and so when the COVID hit in March 2020, I instantly saw it for what it was. Because the truth movement, basically, when I learned about 9/11 and JFK assassination, it gave me a methodology, if you will, for inquiry, just basically looking at something and am I going to buy it the way they say the official narrative is. And so that's why I was pretty much already ready to not buy into the COVID narrative. So if you want to do a global coup d'etat, what's some of the main things that you need to do? Well, the primary one is you have to take out are you guys hearing the screaming?
Yes. Is that from your end, Kat, or is that something?
It is. I happen to be actually at a family gathering, and they're having fun in here. So hold on. Let me shut the door. Sorry. Okay. They're having so much fun. All right. So that should be better. I shut the door. Okay. So where am I here? So a global coup d'etat, what do you need to do? Well, the first place you want to go is who is going to counter it. And since this is a top-down hierarchical coup d'etat that is happening, you want to go after the people who traditionally are counter the establishment. And for years and years and years, that was the liberal left. more specifically, the left. So when I say left, I'll be talking mostly about the left. I mean the liberal left, everything from the Democrats all the way to radical factions. But I'm just going to kind of call it all the left. So the left never did get 9/11. They didn't understand false flags. They shied away from them. They never got inoculated. So I believe by not having the left somehow orchestrated, and there were certain things that were done early on to make sure the left never went down the 9/11 truth path. And as a result, as I said, they never got inoculated. So when COVID came, they were already kind of queued up to not buy that either. And I think part of the uninoculation certainly happened with 9/11, but also with the election of Trump around 2015, the start of that campaign. And what we saw, we're all witness to it, is what I would call, or people call, Trump derangement syndrome. The left got unhinged about anything around Trump. I am not particularly fond of Trump. I actually loathe the man. But nonetheless, it was way out of proportion. And it's like they got people trumped up, if you will, on hyped up on Trump is Hitler, and the country's going to go fascist, and concentration camps are the next step. And so people literally were believing that, and they had 4 years of that kind of propaganda that was stuffed down our throats day in, day out for 4 years. Obviously, it was a cash cow for media, but still, it was massive propaganda brainwashing. And so I see Trump derangement syndrome is the gateway mental virus, if you will, that metastasized into COVID derangement syndrome. And all the people who bought Trump derangement syndrome and got COVID derangement syndrome, it next segued into woke derangement syndrome. Now, that had always been percolating in the re-education camps, this political identity that we're suffering under right now. But it really came into full force during the George Floyd riots. And so it just seemed like anyone who had those two initial derangement syndromes got woke derangement syndrome, which turned into stolen election, that they called that the big lie derangement syndrome, and then to insurrection derangement syndrome, where all of a sudden all of us who were countering that became domestic terrorists. So this kind of derangement syndrome, starting with the Trump one, were like dominoes that were taking out the left, and it had no rational sense to it. To me, I felt like the world was one flew over the cuckoo's nest, and I was Jack Nicholson. The left were the patients, and Nurse Ratched was Tony Fauci. So everything was crazy, and I pretty much knew by the summer of 2020 when a PhD friend of mine would not let me pet his dog because he was afraid he would get COVID by me petting the dog. I knew things were crazy. This is the PhD in the room. So early on, I started thinking about there's something different here. This is not your basic massive propaganda. Granted, they jacked that up on steroids with fear-mongering in the propaganda, such that we have mass hypnotic trance that have been seen in history before. For example, the entire country of Cambodia with the killing fields, Rwanda, and of course, Nazi Germany, Bolshevik Russia, and Mao's Cultural Revolution have all been mass hypnotic, psychotic afflictions of an entire populace. But I felt this was even beyond that. We know they were using applied behavior psychology in England, but this seemed more like some kind of fourth generation mind control. And when I say fourth generation, they refer to fourth gen weaponry, asymmetrical tools used. And this one seemed to me about mind control. So I came up with a theory that I call the neutron bomb of the mind. So back in the 70s, in case you remember, there was a nuclear war tip that destroys all life. It was only an experiment. They never actually used it. But the point of the neutron bomb was it left the infrastructure standing. So that way you could set up a green zone and a military could march in and hit the ground running because all the infrastructure was there. So I started thinking about critical brain analysis and the structure that was there as infrastructure for critical thinking. For example, the prefrontal cortex, you could have economists that can still do statistics, PhDs can write dissertations, finance wonks can crunch numbers. So that's sort of like the brain using its infrastructure. But what got wiped out was common sense. And that somehow they managed to locate that part of the brain and wipe out common sense, because highly educated people, as we are seeing, can barely think straight. Our whole world is one flew over the cuckoo's nest. And I also believe that it was possible to target a demographic with this neutron bomb brain weaponry. Now, obviously, we don't know anything about its actual existence, but I contend that 20 years from now, we're going to be like, oh, that's what they were using on all of those people. And I believe it is like electromagnetic rays, a bomb of the mind, because they've been doing this all along with a group called TIs. TI stands for targeted individual. And there are thousands, actually. The New York Times had an article about 5 years ago. I've been following TIs for many years. And about 5 years ago, they had Dr. John Hall talk about possibly being 10,000 TIs out there. And this is where they go after the brain in ways that people hear voices. You'll hear a lot of the shooters say, oh, I heard all of these voices. I happen to personally know about 8 or 9 TIs have passed through my life. One of them was telling me how every night at 2 a.m. they would program him for nightmares. So this is all kind of mind control stuff that really came out of MKUltra. So the TIs that I believe that they have been and still are using are basic guinea pigs, which is your average populace, and they are just being used as guinea pigs. But I think they also go after activists who they can deactivate, and they can use whatever this fourth-gen mind control weaponry is, go after sleeper TIs, like shooters, and activate them. So this is a messing with the mind that is beyond just propaganda. And I also believe that they are able to do it on an entire demographic. So, for example, with an individual, even just using their credit card, but obviously now with social media, you can get a profile on any individual with a large array of data points on them. So, you know, what do they like to eat? Where do they like to shop? What movies do they like to see? So you can get a profile. I believe that it's possible to get a profile of an entire demographic, because at Bluffdale, Utah, where they keep massive terabytes of information that they collect from phone calls, everything from phone calls, every internet keystroke. I mean, it's amazing the things that they are now actually storing on us. And in that big data, they have more than enough data from the populace and the attributes that they can zero in on. And my theory, it is a theory, but my theory is that they were able to target the entire left based on demographics using big data and then using this fourth-gen mind control weaponry, so that they are still able to think straight, but any common sense has been wiped out. So part of that is to neutralize people politically, as they introduce these various derangement syndromes. But also in the 1900s, big foundations got together and realized that they didn't need a lot of critical thinkers. What they needed is rote factory workers. And now with technology, it's on steroids. They want to create worker bee technicians for the technocratic state that they're moving us towards. So I am a leftist who left the left. For whatever reason, I was inoculated. That's probably part of it. I didn't get hit by this mind control that they seem totally out of it, the left. And so now I'm with a group that is not left. I don't know if there's a name for them per se. I mean, Hillary gave them a name. She called them deplorable. I like to think of people as proto-yellow vest. I'm a proud deplorable. I don't know if I want to use that word, though. So for the purposes of this talk, I'm just going to talk about patriots. But that's not even the right word. I just don't want to keep saying the non-left. That doesn't make sense, and I don't want to say deplorable. So I'm going to talk about patriots or people in the freedom movement. It's a wide diversity, far more diverse than the left. The left is actually a very narrow, orthodox, you can't get beyond the perimeters of orthodox thinking with the left. Whereas the freedom movement is comprised of Christians, Trumpers, parents with vaxxed children, conservatives, leftists who left the left, many diverse people of color, especially when you consider that 70% of all African Americans in the United States have not been vaccinated. That's an extremely high number. So I found as an activist in New York doing all kinds of rallies, and I'm at the White Hot Center of New York activism. It's a very diverse group. It includes first responders, a lot of military. So on the one hand, with this wide array of different mindsets, there's a lot of difficulty. It's like a cultural tower of Babel, a lot of disconnect. People can't culturally talk the same language. So how do you herd all these cats? It makes it difficult. On the positive side of that, there's no orthodoxy. It may be a cacophonous melange, but it's rich and is multivaried. From that rich source comes a lot of innovation. And what I'm finding is, rather than, and a lot of people think, oh, now you're the right because you're no longer left. No, it doesn't work like that. That binary thinking is not how I roll. I consider myself a transpartisan that wants to take the best of both worlds and leave the rot behind. So I'm very issues-based. So when we look at the patriots versus the left had, it still has, crack grassroots organizing. They know how to do outreach, freedom brigades, very disciplined at meetings and marches. They know how to do civil disobedience. The left has, the patriots are, as I said, they can't necessarily talk to each other. Many people have never been activists. In terms of funding, the left complained a lot, but they had a lot of money coming in compared to the freedom movement that I'm very actively involved with in New York. We don't have much money at all. It's very shoestring. The left has movement lawyers. We don't have any lawyers. It's very hard to find lawyers who will work pro bono for us. The left has a history of struggle, so they understand the role of police, the state, and just the history of what it means to fight the state. Whereas this new patriot movement is, they don't even know what COINTELPRO is. They don't understand any kind of history. It's just a blank slate. So that has its good side and its shadow side, that they're neophyte activists. So they have a lot of spirit. And I tell you, these people do have spirit. We had a Pfizer march, and we were literally marching in rain, high winds, thunder, lightning, and hail. It was biblical, but that's to give you an idea of how spirited these people are. So I see four hallmarks. How am I doing for time there, Cheryl?
Let me just check here. You have got about 5 minutes left.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so I've discovered kind of four hallmarks of people in the freedom movement. There's a spirituality that's there. The left has been eviscerated of any kind of spiritual connection, and that doesn't have to be, you know, God in terms of the three major religions, Christianity, Islam, or Judaism, just any kind of spirituality. Their religion is secular humanism, empirical materialism, which brings on a nihilism. Science becomes more the God, the technocratic priest. So that's an easy segue when you have taken away this spiritual authority. It's an easy segue to believe in technocrats. Whereas patriots answer to a higher authority. They answer to the divine creation. And that's why they had to close down churches and mosques and synagogues during the lockdown. These the people who are controlling the left want to be the higher authority, but the people in the freedom movement have this higher authority already, and that's in the form of the great divine. What we see in terms of common sense, I already talked about the left, that it's like a neutron bomb hit them. Whereas in the freedom movement, I like to tell them that when I'm speaking at a rally, none of you are here because you listen to propaganda. You are all here because you're listening to yourself and learning to think for yourself. It's not because the media told you to come here. Also, they are very, we have democracy in our DNA. Now, the left supposedly did too, because they're Americans, but it's been eviscerated. I never once thought that I would be shouting, USA, USA. That to me is empire. No, that's, you know, the empire slogan is we're going to conquer everything. But the chant of USA has taken on an entire new meaning when you look at globalists wanting to strip away any kind of ethnicity or connection to our land, our people, our values. So I see that USA chant and democracy and our constitutional values in an entirely different way. If anything's emblematic of the left, it's their ACLU who no longer supports censorship. Two other hallmarks is not overly educated. The left have been through these re-education camps, the universities, for several generations now. So they're like an inculcated breeding ground for wokeness. The left tends to work with screens in offices, and they're more dependent on government handouts or foundations, corporate, much more close to UBI. I think they're highly UBI'd up. Whereas freedom people tend to work with their hands. They're more outdoors, first responders. They're more entrepreneurial, more resourceful. Now, these are vast generalizations, but by and large, one is the educated class, and one is more the class that works with their hands, if you will, the vast generalizations. But it makes a big difference when you look at economically who's going to be bought off and who isn't. There's the whole sense of niceness. I was really surprised when I was at January 6th how genuinely nice people were. I just could not believe it. I sound dumb, but the left is out to destroy, revolution, tear down, and they invented this concept of hate speech. I hate you. You're a hater. You're a hater. You're a hater. Well, you become the hater when you have so much hate in you. Whereas people in the freedom movement, they're not shot through with this sort of cynicism. They may have problems. There's a lot of dysfunctionality when we think of opioids and working class problems, but there's not this cynicism. And so I find that this new heterogeneous group of people I'm working with are more obedient, more willing to obey law and order, traditional values and family, all things I used to shun as patriarchal and overly conservative. But now that I see that our whole world being destroyed, those become, everything's inverted now in our 1984 world. Okay, I'm closing up here. And so they're using this niceness that they've weaponized against us. I think I'll end there. I do have more to say, but bottom line, I think for every of their 60,000 walking brain dead, we are worth one. I'm worth one of their 60,000 people who can still think, be nice, have these values. We're worth every one of their 60,000 walking brain dead. And as a result, I do believe that we are going to win this battle. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kat. Let me get us out of lecture mode and into Q&A mode here.
Can I just ask? Can I just ask, Kat? Would you want a few more minutes if you had them? Like, was there some stuff you wanted to say? Because, you know, I could make a motion
okay.
to that effect. If you know, we can add another five. If that would, do you want to do that?
No, because it goes off on a whole. It would probably be another 10 or 20 minutes to really explain it well. So
okay.
That's okay. I tend to write an essay of all of this that it goes much deeper than what I've said, and I've even truncated a lot of what I've said, but you get the picture.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go into Q&A then. So if you want to ask Kat a question, it's *6 to get in the queue. And Kat, while we're waiting for people to do that, I just wanted to, in Connecticut here where I live, the people who have organized most of the resistance are the Libertarian Party. And I have the same experience as you, that there's a totally different than the lefty people I'm used to hanging around with, but very nice people. And I thought very knowledgeable in a lot of ways. And it's helped me because I have a broader perspective now than I had before on just people in general. And so it's been good. So we do have a couple of questions for you. And the first one is from Carl, Collard Golovin. Carl, go ahead.
Kat, hi. How are you? Thank you for your presentation. Kat may be
muted. Let me just unmute her. Sorry. Okay, Kat, you're unmuted now. Sorry. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Hi, Kat. As background for my question, I'll reference all the three books written by Laurent Guyenot, Guyenot, concerning the influence of Zionism in the last couple of thousand years of history, and, of course, also Christopher Bolin. But in that context, I find that often our worldviews, our analysis of processes and events is traceable to our religious bringing or influence in our lives. I was just curious, did you have a religious upbringing, and what was it?
Oh, okay, thank you. Laurent Guyenot, I was an editor of his book, From Yahweh to Zion.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I was raised Catholic on both sides, but I never felt really comfortable with it, and it wasn't until I was 12 years old that I found out my mother had been excommunicated from the church when I was 12. The special council in Rome finally gave her an annulment, and I became very cynical. It's like, I'm the child here. You guys are the adults, and you bought this stuff. So I became very agnostic, if not atheist, and it wasn't until years later that I found more, I guess you would say, a combination of shamanism and New Age. And I'm much more tolerant now of many other religions, what I call man-made religions, so to speak. They're all man-made, but more the main Abrahamic religions. So I consider myself very spiritual, but not religious.
Thank you. And I'm amazed and impressed that you were an editor of From Yahweh to Zion. I think that is maybe definitely the top 10 list of most important books I've ever read, and it's near the top of that right now.
That's for sure.
I think there's a lot of evidence that the Roman Church in particular has been influenced, infiltrated, co-opted by Talmudists over the millennia, and maybe the Jesuit order is most thoroughly embedded with Talmudists, and their thinking, their way of analyzing is arguably Talmudic. But thank you for answering the question.
You're welcome.
Okay, great. Thank you, Carl. Next, we have Xander. Xander, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I really appreciated the report from your on-the-ground activities, and I just wanted to express solidarity, as somebody who's always been an independent thinker and has aligned with quote-unquote right and left factions. I guess I have a comment, which is that I think what you're describing is accurate. I liked the terminology patriot. I liked the terminology freedom movement. I felt that that fit very nicely for what I see happening in the country. And I wanted to perhaps caution you in linking the discussion of the TIs to this broader conversation. And the reason for it is, while I'm not outright dismissing the existence of targeted individuals, I think that there are many instances where the explanation for what those people are experiencing could be more easily or readily explained by mental health or other things. And so by bringing that into what I think is really important developments, it just might, like you started your presentation off with that, and I think a lot of people might just turn their ears off at that point because they're going to have assumptions. And it's hard to prove, like next to impossible to prove whether a TI is an actual TI or not. And so it's one of those things that's like so ambiguous. It's just, I don't know. I think you might benefit from leaving it out of the conversation. It's just feedback, unsolicited, but I value you and what you had to share with us. And so I wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I could possibly go along with that. I wanted to talk about my neutron bomb theory, which I actually kind of like, and I wouldn't take that off the table. And it seemed that because there have been TIs, the degree, I don't know, but I absolutely believe that there are, it seemed like a perfect example to point to of how beyond propaganda, mind control can work, and Sirhan is probably one of the first TIs. So what I do appreciate is I think I can take it out of the opening and wait until I have an audience, maybe more in the palm of my hand, and then bring in my pet theory.
Yeah, maybe. And then the other thing, too, is you're really right, actually. I do like the neutron bomb. I mean, as far as social manipulation, I mean, these movements are calculated with certainty. You know, they map it out. You know, they crafted, Russia. They crafted the language behind the big lie. They craft these things, right? Undoubtedly, it's coordinated, right? You know, our Great Reset, all that sort of stuff. And it is certainly a social manipulation of some sort and has the effect of non-lethal weaponry, right? I mean, this is information warfare. And so you're not wrong about that. And so, yeah, anyways, thanks. Thanks very much for the presentation. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Kat, that's it for our questions. Any final thoughts before we move on?
No, that's it. Thank you very much for having me. And I am with a family gathering, so unfortunately I'm not going to get to hear Richard Gage. I'll listen to him on the audio.
Oh, okay, Kat, we have one more question. Do you have time for that?
Sure.
Well, they just signed up, so let me just put it. Here you go. Fern, go ahead.
Hi, Kat. It's Fern.
Hey, Fern.
And I'm so grateful for your organizing in our movement. I remember when 9/11 first happened, even whatever her name is from Democracy Now. And
Amy Goodman.
Amy Goodman and Ralph Nader and a lot of those people agreed that 9/11 was an inside job. They just focused, and International Action Center, they all agreed 9/11 was an inside job, an act of war. And then they just didn't talk about it anymore, but they knew it was about creating war. And our freedom movement is still related to, like, a separation of people. You know, 9/11 was to make, you know, prejudice with Muslims, and our freedom movement is separating the vaccinated people from the unvaccinated people. And I have a lot more to say about, like, the Nuremberg Code and how my own personal life was related and my own experiences with that. But I just wanted to share my gratitude for you speaking up and giving our movement some good reports, because it really is important to me. Thank you.
You're welcome. I kind of look at the freedom movement for me as the truth movement 2.0. because we are looking at truth. And I might as well give an announcement. Probably it'll be January 30th. There's going to be a big national march and rally in Washington to oppose the vax mandates. So maybe people can start thinking of a huge march on Washington for, in essence, what is a an assault on our freedom. It's above and beyond this medical concocted medical emergency. There's a global coup d'etat going on, and this movement, more than any other right now, is at the forefront, the white hot center of opposing the this global coup d'etat.
Could I ask a question before you go, Kat?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Craig. I can't get in the queue because I'm one of the two hosts. Yeah, I just wondered what you thought. I always had the feeling when Trump became president that this served a purpose for the globalists. That his, you know, the media was just too unanimous about how horrible he was. I mean, not that he wasn't. I agree with what you said. Not that he wasn't. He didn't have many horrible qualities, but it seemed out of proportion. It didn't seem reasonable. And with COVID coming right after that, I see the divisions. Like people I know who talked about Trump like constantly, and of course now that Biden's in the White House, they're not talking about politics, that kind of politics at all, because it was only Trump that they wanted to attack. But it just seems to have been a perfect setup for the divisions that have come from the pandemic. You know, people I know that are berating me for not getting vaccinated, you know, tended to be the people that despise Trump and who aren't, you know, aren't talking about Biden. So I just wonder if the idea had occurred to you, or whether you had any thoughts about the idea that perhaps Trump being in the White House was part of the bigger plan, that he was there for a reason.
Yes, I do believe that. That's why I called Trump derangement syndrome the gateway mental virus that is metastasized in all the others. And we're dealing with people who can't even think rationally now. And I think that they needed a highly polarizing figure in order to polarize the populace, to have these divide and conquer strategies going on as part of the global coup d'etat, such that right versus left, Republican versus Democrat, China versus the West, vax versus unvaxxed, all of these kind of classic internecine battles keep everybody from looking at who's really destroying our entire way of life on a level that has never really been seen before in the history of humanity. So Trump played a very key role being installed because he was such a divisive figure who they could use him and stoke the populace in this kind of hatred. And also the opposite, people who love Trump, even though he's selling them down the drain. I mean, he never did hardly anything he said he was going to do. So it worked both ways. Yeah, I think he was installed to help jumpstart the whole great reset, the transhumanist agenda, the Agenda 21, Agenda 30 that we're facing. And they had to do it in the empire first. They don't really care about Africa, barely Europe. So goes empire, so goes the world. And so that's why, and so goes New York, so goes the country, and then it spills out from there. So, yeah, it was very important to get somebody in this, the Biden right now, President Poopy Pants. I mean, that to me seems highly purposeful as well in terms of breaking down our values, demoralizing people, putting the U.S. out there as degenerate and senile and dysfunctional. So that doesn't have to be. They could easily shunt him aside and put in Kamala, who they'll probably shun both of them aside, and then through unelected official come forward to run it. It's all been very purposeful.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks so much, Kat. Really appreciate your presentation, and hopefully you'll come back on with the rest of that you didn't get to talk about tonight and talk about it another time.
Okay, great. It has to do with what I call right brain activism, how we can, instead of protest, be more positive and look for, Havel calls, parallel polis, parallel cities, parallel structures, what we can do for the positive, because we're constantly having to be warriors against the dark, but what we need to also start being very proactive with is bringers in of the light and the positive and new ways of being. So thank you.
Okay, great. We'll look forward to that. Thanks, Kat.
Okay.
So, and now moving on, our next speaker is Richard Gage. And Richard does not need an introduction for sure. Let me put us back into lecture mode. I'm going to give him an introduction anyway. Let us get back into lecture mode. And again, great. So let me introduce Richard, and he's an architect of 30 years from the San Francisco Bay Area, a member of AIA, and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, now acting independently. He continues to lead the charge toward a new investigation of the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. He's worked on most types of building construction, including numerous fireproofed steel-framed buildings. He's delivered his live multimedia presentation, Blueprint for Truth, more than 700 times in dozens of foreign countries and 110 American cities, and has appeared on more than 600 radio and TV shows. And most of you have all met him when he was traveling around the country doing all those presentations. And he's now working with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, and he's here tonight to tell us about a new project they're working on. So, Richard, welcome, and it's all yours. Take it away. Richard, are you here? He's unmuted. Richard? Well, let's see. Let me try muting him and unmuting him again. Richard, are you here?
Hello,
Richard.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah. Okay. I don't know what happened there, but go ahead.
It was on your side, for what it's worth. Thanks, everybody. It's awesome to be here with you. Some of you don't know, perhaps, that I was let go from AE 9/11 Truth, that happened in September as a result of my speaking about COVID on four or five separate occasions, remarks that I probably shouldn't have made representing 3,500 architects and engineers, but which I felt compelled to make, and I'm still feeling compelled to make. But those remarks, I think, undermined Spike Lee, who had called me a year ago into his studio in Brooklyn to give him the evidence, and I did. He was deeply moved. It was 2 hours. He put a good 15 minutes of that, at least, into a half-hour segment on 9/11 Truth, which we were all excited about. It was supposed to air on HBO on September 11th. It didn't, because Slate Magazine had dug up some of these comments that I made in a hallway interview in a conspiracy conference, if you will, the Red Pill Expo, where I was speaking. I think it was that venue. Anyway, what I said was COVID was a deep state false flag hoax, and that the vaccines were likely to kill us. And all of that is true. But it shouldn't have been my voice as the spokesperson of 1811 Truth that was making it. But now that I'm not the spokesperson of 1811 Truth, I will be a little more out there about it. By the way, I really appreciate everything Kat just said. I am myself in the freedom movement, and if you will, and I like that name. I like her characterization of what's happened to the left and the right. So, but back to Spike Lee. So he felt undermined by these comments, which Slate Magazine produced, and he pulled this 30-minute segment. We didn't get to have our half hour of fame to millions of viewers, and that falls on my shoulders largely, because while he was pressured, certainly, by who knows who, this was probably gave him the excuse to withdraw this half-hour segment. So our PR consultant over at 8911 Truth deemed this a PR crisis and convinced the majority of our board to let go of the CEO, and it was quite a difficult set of arguments. And so I'm on my own now, and I'm marching forward. I've got a website. I hope you will all visit it. It's richardgage911.org. And it's going to go through yet another a large set of metamorphosis. Stay tuned for that in the next 2 weeks. And I have been adopted, if you will, orphaned by 8911 Truth, but adopted by the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. They have asked me to come on to their board, and we are already very productive. Before we get to 8911, before I get to LC911 Truth, let me share what I'm doing on my own here. I've started a new video podcast called aptly Richard Gage 9/11 Unleashed. And I have already got about 10 podcasts up on the website. I've interviewed Niels Harrod, Kevin Ryan, Dan Hanley of Pilots for 9/11, and Robin Horden, who's an air traffic controller, truth teller, and Madhav Asetti, a philosopher, anesthesiologist. There's some fascinating interviews over there. Tomorrow night is Benny Wills, a comedian and MC and a truth teller through poetry. He also has an incredible course he's giving. He'll be talking about that, called Parhesia. It's how to get through to people who don't share the same values as you do. So we can all use that, right? So you might want to check out this podcast tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Pacific. It'll go live on YouTube, and you can find it on my website. My YouTube channel is Richard Gage 9/11. Facebook should be Richard Gage 9/11. Twitter is Richard Gage 9/11. And I've already got 6 or 7 radio interviews since leaving 8911 Truth. And a speaking engagement coming up in February. Anarchapulco just contacted me today with an invite to that large conference out of Acapulco. And so I'm very excited to continue everything that I've been doing, plus a whole lot more. And I'm working harder than I ever had. I'm finding out that, again, I shared this the last time I was on this call, but I'll just reiterate it. The people at AE 911 Truth are among the hardest working people I have ever had the pleasure and the pain to work with. They don't stop. And Kelly and Andy and Craig and Ted are an incredible team, and they're going to do a great job at AE. They were doing a whole lot of the work, certainly most of it. So I think now what we've got is them continuing to blaze on doing what 8911 Truth does best, and myself blazing on with additional subjects of in and around the 9/11 Truth movement, as I bring on speakers, personalities, researchers. I need to get Barry Zwicker on my show too. Hi, Barry. I understand you're here too, and many others. I'm just booked out, way booked out. I've got some incredible speakers coming up. So, what else can I do? I'm going to create a community hub with the help of an amazing volunteer, Sandra Gelmi, we've got a listing of the websites in the 9/11 Truth Movement. We've got a listing of the individuals in the 9/11 Truth Movement. We've got a listing of the groups in the 9/11 Truth Movement. And we've got an infrastructure capable of signing up there on my website in the community hub. And we've got so people can find each other and find the resources there. And there'll be a whole lot more resources than there are now. So I'm hoping to help activists find each other. I'm hoping to assist in any way I can, speaking. And I've been interviewing leaders of local 9/11 truth groups, and like Al Magaletta and Chris Gruner in Boston, and we'll have many other leaders in local 9/11 truth groups on. So this is an area which we stayed away from at 9/11 Truth because it just got painful, herding cats. And don't ask me why I'm thinking it'll be less painful this time, but we're signing up volunteers to handle a lot of this workload, and I've got a lot of help. And there's a volunteer form, by the way, on our website, so I hope you'll take advantage of that. There's also a need to fund this operation, just like there is at AE 9/11 Truth. AE 9/11 Truth never had grants from corporations. It was always a grassroots support. And it still is for me outside of 8911 Truth. And fortunately, I have 100 people subscribed who are paying at the $7 a month level. And I'm so grateful for that. And so there's $700 a month. That is a start. And so it's certainly not going to get us very far. But I just want you to know everything I'm doing to complete the mission of getting a real investigation, waking up the American people, overcoming the denial in our government and the media, and censorship in the media, and whatever I can do from this new platform, I intend on doing, but I do need your help. One of the things we're doing at ALC 9/11, because what they have done is taken the evidence that I and others have developed over 15 years at 8911 Truth, and they have put it into 60 exhibits and submitted it to the U.S. Attorney in Manhattan. The legal effort is undergoing motions and counter motions, but Mick says this is normal. Some people have gotten dispirited because nothing's happened in 2 years. There's a lot more that will happen, and there is a lot that has happened. So he says he's won cases that have gone 7 and 10 years. And this is not a small deal. So we are suing the U.S. attorney in court to prove that he's given these exhibits to the grand jurors. There will be oral arguments in that case that it will be heard on January 21st. So we'll find out how to let you guys know how to tune into that. It may not be public, though. Anyway, these 60 exhibits are going to now be, through the help of an Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist and filmmaker, Christina Borgeson, who made the film TWA Flight 800. We will be bringing these 60 exhibits to life in a courtroom designed specifically for educating those 23 or however many it turns out to be grand jurors. So Mick and I will be in the courtroom filming after the first of the year, and this is also designed to be put out on YouTube publicly for free to educate members of the public, the media, etc. Because the filming will in episode one, Mick will present the legal case, why this is a case, why it's before the grand jurors, all the legal introductions that need to be made, and then he will be sort of cross-examining me. That's not true. He'll be asking me questions, and I'll be answering them about specific points of evidence. We'll put these evidence points out, for starting with Building 7, in two or three sections, 15 to 20 minutes each, and they'll be put on YouTube as we complete them, and then they will be available for the public to see. I've got 5 hours of material. I'm going to winnow it down to about 3 hours probably, and it's going to be the essence of the material, but it's got to be comprehensive in scope so the jury can, you know, see the ins and outs. It's not just a quick summary. So we're going to also be two men on a mission, the mission of our lives, each of us, you know, for more than a decade. And so there's got to be a story associated with these men, and so we will be interviewed in context in the courtroom, but also at home. I live in Idaho, for those of you who don't know. So the grand jurors are people too. They're going to get to know us. So it's not just about evidence. It's a story, and this story, by the way. The evidence itself is so important following the excellent film made by Dylan Avery and Kelly and Ted over at 8911 Truth about the stories of the four families who have been struggling for 20 years to get truth, get to the truth, and get justice for their loved ones. But they didn't have time or bandwidth to get the evidence into that film. So this film is so necessary because it provides them, backs up their story of the murderous, explosive deaths of their loved ones. Absolutely critical. So it's just very timely, and I'm real excited to have a big part in helping especially after the fiasco with Spike Lee, which I take responsibility for. So this film is essential. Now, we've already raised $40,000 for this film. There are many supportive donors who have put this seed money together. It is a $120,000 film. So we've got a long way to go. And we're going to be starting our campaign in earnest in a week or so. And so we've already got the article about the film, what I've been telling you and more, up on my website at richardgage911.org. You can see the artwork for the film. And you can donate for the film at the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. And their website is lcfor911.org. So that's lcfor911.org. And I encourage everybody to help over there. The levels are $20, $50, $100, and more if you find yourself capable of stretching. So, and those are stretches for most of us, just those basic levels. But others are capable of supporting the project at that level. So I think I've presented what happened in September, what I've begun to create in the last 2 months, and my position at LC 9/11 and this new project. So maybe now we can take some questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Let's see if there are. I'm going to put us in Q&A mode. So star 6, if you'd like to ask a question. Let me unmute Richard again. Richard, are you there? Can you talk now? Did that work? I unmuted you.
Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, great. Okay. Just okay. Wanted to make sure it worked this time. Okay. So our first question is from Carl. Carl, go ahead.
Richard, hi, Carl Golovin here.
Hello, Carl.
Hi. Well, let's see. For starters, what do you think of the chance that Spike Lee was involved in sort of setting you up and AE 9/11 as well? And as a reference, I'll point to Spike Lee's historical friendship association with Oliver Stone, who, of course, produced JFK, which most of us, most of our lives, have thought was just a great film. But it actually causes us all to focus on just the CIA, Pentagon, and not on the Zionist elements, both domestically and overseas, involved in that as well as 9/11. So Spike Lee, through that association, if you were set up, I wonder even today, could you raise funds to, you know, publicly make an offer to Spike Lee to buy that half hour of unused footage that never aired, that you would just like to put it out on a CD, perhaps privately?
Well, the first question was, what are the chances that he was setting us up? I was 5 feet in front of the man as I was giving him my evidence for 2 hours. He was asking incredibly good questions. He was deeply involved emotionally. He was in tears.
Well, could you have Spike Lee on your program now then to talk with him? Would he has he been willing to receive calls from you since they dropped that segment? Could you contact with him?
I didn't have the courage to call Spike after what he had been through, so I didn't ask him. I love the idea of raising funds to purchase that section of film. I imagine that AE 9/11 Truth would be much more successful, A, because they maintained a decent level of communication after the after he pulled the segment, and B, they have greater capability by a factor of 100 than I do now to raise funds, because I don't have a mailing list with 80,000 people on it. I don't have a bank account to speak of. I think I would encourage AE to follow up. He's more likely to provide it to AE than he is to me. You had another question too, Carl?
Well, Richard, just to follow up on that, I think Spike Lee actually owes you a whole lot more for what the New York media put you through in this case, more so than Spike Lee. I mean, he's arguably also, he's a professional actor. He can sit 5 feet from somebody and shed a tear. But you're saying he asked all those right questions. He should be, he should have that relationship with you. I would encourage you to pursue that, because, you're the connection he had, not, just AE 9/11 as an entity. But you bring to mind, I think, something really important. Maybe other activists would benefit from your giving even a talk on both the benefits and the pitfalls of being a nonprofit entity. Because I understand as part of that, part of the fundraising mechanism, you sort of lose access to your whole email database of donors. That seems wrong. It seems like the organization should know who their donors are. So thank you.
Well, the organization does know who their donors are. I mean, AE knows who their donors are. I didn't have reason to have access to that information, most of it. It just, and this all came as such a surprise. I don't need access. Well, I would love to have an 80,000 person mailing list. You bet, but I don't
yes.
have that. In fact, I hardly had access to any kind of a retirement. It was offered, and it was generous, but it came with the stipulations of a very well-paid attorney who made damn sure that I was never going to speak again or use any of the materials that I had developed over 15 years. So it would effectively have shut me down. I would not be able to do Richard Gage 9/11 and continue my mission had I accepted that retirement. And
Have you considered countering that through even legal counsel? I know no one wants to see litigation within the truth community, but, discreetly, I mean, you absolutely are deserved a generous long-term severance package for what you created. And I think you should have some counsel countering what you were offered. If they were trying to muzzle you, that's not right.
They have the right to keep me from using materials with their branding on it, for instance, in a contract where they're offering funds, and I have the right to accept those terms, but I couldn't. So I didn't. A contract has to benefit both parties. So, no, I haven't gotten legal counsel, after after this, it just became real apparent that there was no way that I could do what I need to do, which is use the presentations that I have, which is put the videos that I've developed, which do have AE 9/11 Truth branding on them, which I can't rebrand 100 videos. You know, I can't debrand them. That's just one of the issues. There's multiple issues regarding secrets of the trade and so forth that are not defined, and there's a $10,000 per occurrence penalty if I should ever slip up. It's just, it was really quite painful to read and to contemplate signing.
Well, that seems really onerous, and with your being on the board of the Lawyers Committee, I would think you could get referred to someone just to offer you advice on discreetly. I'm not suggesting litigating, but really, I mean, other people use their brand. I mean, they encourage, AE911 encourages others to use their branded materials. And, it just seems like there's a degree of animosity that, you know, in trying to restrict you that shouldn't be there. So I don't want to
it's
go
off. It's not animosity. I don't think it's animosity at all. I think the AE911 Truth Board is acting in good faith, and that they've got counsel that they made a lot of money for that specializes in making sure that the nonprofit is protected, but has no interest whatsoever in allowing my mission to proceed. So,
I think this is a conversation that maybe you and Richard should have personally rather than on this call. But
yeah, sorry to digress. Their counsel just doesn't have your interest in mind. You need to have someone look after yours. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Carl.
Okay, and just Richard, let me just check. There was someone else in the queue. Hang on a second. Xander, you were in the queue, and I see you're not now. Are you good? Do you have a question, or did you change your mind?
I did sort of change my mind, but hey, I'm on the mic now. Richard, thanks for the presentation, and as I've publicly commented on some of your videos, Richard Gage Unleashed, I think you're making great moves. I like the content you're putting out there. It's refreshing. It's good. Quality stuff, man. So keep it rolling. The comments.
Thank you, Xander. And we can't hear you very well, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I'm driving right now, so it's not going to be good. So I guess the comment I was going to say is that when you're making this evidentiary video with the Lawyers Committee, so this is kind of a comment to the Lawyers Committee, I think it might be beneficial to reference the extensive public knowledge base on nanothermite that has happened since Niels Harrit and Stephen Jones first produced their Bentham paper. Because if you delve into what's been happening in the peer-reviewed literature, I mean, it's grown in leaps and bounds. It's no longer an exotic material, and it's very well understood by many universities around the world. And so it might be, you know, it might help to pull a grand jury into the understanding that this stuff is very real, tangible material that can be acquired now relatively easily, but in 2001, not so much. So that's just a comment.
No, that's great, Xander. I appreciate that. I would love to have your help in locating those post-2009 references. In addition, I'm very aware that you've been working yourself on getting labs to test some of the dust for this material. I'm officially inviting you to come onto the podcast and talk about it if you feel comfortable doing that, and if FAE will allow you, that would be awesome to have you.
Okay, I appreciate the invite. I think at this point I'm just going to decline because for personal reasons I tend to like to be a little bit more low-key in the truth movement, you know, and my role on stuff. But I will keep it under consideration because there are things that I would like to speak about more on this. But, you know, I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, maybe you could just give me some of those
privately.
References.
Yeah, let's definitely discuss the, you know. And I recognize this call is going to be posted on the web and that sort of thing. And I make comments, but I just don't know that I want to be on a video right now.
Sure.
At any rate, yeah. But yeah, and I will. I'd be happy to work with you on trying to find some of that peer-reviewed stuff. I think that'd be a fun project. So,
thank you.
Okay. So. That's it for our questions, Richard. Thank you so much for coming on, and thanks for all you're doing. Appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Cheryl. And thanks,
okay.
Everybody.
Yeah, Richard, we'll be in touch for other calls and for to help you out with your work. So thank you. Okay, and now we're on to our announcement section. Does anyone have any announcements, events, books, anything they want to talk about? Well, let me unmute everybody. Sorry, just a moment. Take me a moment here. Okay.
Did our session end there? I just got a call for about 30 seconds. And
yes, I just unmuted everybody, but it didn't really unmute everybody, so let me try again.
Is it too late for me to ask a question?
No, you can go ahead. Richard's still with us.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I want to clarify something. First of all, I guess I had a question before, and now based on your last couple of answers, I have another one. The first one was, considered the possibility that the possibility that damage could be done to the truth movement by all the publicity that this is getting from you doing all these shows and being so visible? Did you sort of weigh the possibility that could have some damaging effect? And then I have a follow up. I can ask both now.
Well,
I can
hold on, Craig. I want to understand the first part first. That the damaging effect would follow from what exactly?
Well, if people have a negative view of AE because of this event, and you're speaking like very frequently, you're going on all kinds of shows and everything, and telling this story. It seems like it's great publicity for you, but it seems like it's not going to be a very positive thing for AE to sort of have you going around telling the story to like every show. I mean, is that something that you thought about, that maybe that might have a downside for the movement?
Now, this is a great question, and I appreciate it so much. One of the things that is important is that people don't know en masse. People don't know. The 80,000 people on the email list of 1811 Truth don't know that its founder and CEO was fired. They don't know that because they weren't told that. And so they still think or imagine that Richard Gage is still the CEO, or that if he stepped down for some reason, he's still with CEO with AE. For instance, just today, AE put out an email that has a letter from one of the members that talks about the evidence, and it uses my current webinar, me talking and giving out the evidence of the pulverization of body parts, for instance. And I'm honored to have AE use my materials, but it's another example of AE kind of kind of continuing this illusion that Richard Gage is still with us. And so I feel compelled to let people know that I'm not with 8E911 Truth. That is the truth that wasn't told by AE. So whether it benefits AE or not, by me telling the truth post-AE, that's not so much of a concern of mine. My concern is getting the word out there, and part of my story in formation of RichardGage911.org is that I was fired from AE, and I want people to know why, and I want them to know what my culpability was in that firing, that I disagreed vehemently that we had a PR crisis and that the CEO needed to step down. So I fought that, and I lost. And that's an important part of the story. Now, I don't think that it makes AE look so bad. I think AE honestly thought that they were doing the right thing by letting me go in that way. They honestly thought that they had a PR crisis, I think mostly, probably, they were upset that I had caused this problem, Spike pulling the 30-minute segment, because the board had indeed asked me not to talk about COVID, that this is not what you need to be doing. It has problematic effects, which we came to find out indeed it did. And so I wasn't able to restrain myself, and I feel very bad for that, about that. But that's part of the story, too. And so AE doesn't necessarily look bad by firing me, but people deserve the right. They have the right to know the truth about the situation. That's why I'm talking about it.
Well, then, okay, so would that mean that you would not have a problem with AE laying all its cards on the table and publicly saying, you know, its side of the story?
Yes. I've been asking AE911 Truth Board to write their members and tell them what happened and why. It's extremely important that their members know that I'm not there and why I'm not there, as I just highlighted. And I've laid all the cards on the table that I'm aware of. If you're aware of any others that we haven't discussed here, I encourage you to be flat out open and honest with our audience here and tell them, yes, absolutely. And AE should tell their donors whatever it is that needs to be told about my leaving.
They released they did release a statement explaining why it was done.
Well, let's talk about that statement. All AE told in a press release, not an email to its 80,000 members. They said Richard Gage will no longer act as CEO of AE911 Truth. We appreciate him for all his service and everything. That is a paraphrase of what they told, and it's not the truth.
It said more than that. It talked about the Spike Lee thing being the reason. So it clearly made it clear that you were fired. It didn't say you just were no longer the CEO. I mean, they gave the reason.
Well, that's what I've been saying. Yes, whatever relevant information there is regarding the loss of the founder and CEO of 15 years of 8E911 Truth. The 80,000 members, email list members, subscribers of 8E911 Truth and its donors deserve to know. But its donors I don't believe they were told either. So, yeah, there's the maintenance of an illusion at 8E911 Truth, which deserves to be corrected.
Well, there's something you said that I wonder if it needs correcting. You talked about the severance offer and that it would effectively keep you from ever speaking again, and it would stop you in your mission permanently. Now, I mean, I've read that. You know, I read the wording of what you're talking about, and it would have no such effect. I mean, it couldn't have such an effect.
Let me tell you.
For a period of time, perhaps, but not permanently.
Well, it's 2 years. And so,
but not,
you know,
speaking, though.
If
speaking
I can't
not,
speak my mission for 2 years, I won't be able to start it up again.
I don't believe it mentioned you speaking, Richard.
Say it again.
I don't believe that it blocked you from speaking.
Well, let me share with you. Since you're asking, and I'll put it on my website so everybody can see it, but it absolutely and clearly does keep me from speaking. Gage agrees, however, that he shall delete and destroy any and all AE-911 Truth proprietary or confidential information, including but not limited to donor member lists or contact information for AE-911 Truth presentations or marketing training material. Now, these lists include many personal friends and relationships that I've had, and I'm now fundraising at LC-911 Truth, and there's many, many people on both lists, as you can imagine. So the presentations and training materials that I've developed over the last 15 years are of necessity an integral component of my ongoing mission. The requirement is to destroy them. And I have not done this, and I won't do this.
Okay.
So while I'm rebranding some of the brochures and things, I can't rebrand the videos. It would take 100 hours.
Right.
That's just one of 10 items that I could go on about. But I think that's kind of dragging out our audience into an area where I don't imagine they're going to want us to go, and where I don't think we need to go publicly, but if you're going to push it, I'll publicize it on my website.
Well, I don't think that's helpful, but you know, that's up to you. I'm raising this issue because of what you said on this call. I never would have, you know, even considered mentioning the whole severance issue, but you are letting people have the impression that it was blocking you from talking about 9/11 forever, and no wonder, you know, Carl was sort of wondering whether you should seek legal advice. But I mean, that's not what they were doing. They were concerned about their materials, not the evidence. They don't own the evidence, you know.
No, but the material is what I've developed over the last 15 years. And believe me, the wording of this agreement is such that I would not be able to use it lest I be charged $10,000 for liability. And there's a branding all over the videos, and I can't remove those. That's just one of the several examples.
Okay.
And it is for 24 months. You're right, Craig. But effectively, that's forever, because I'm not going to put my mission down for 24 months and then pick it up again. It's just not going to happen. So that's an unfair characterization.
Okay. So it's not effectively stopping you from speaking forever. It's just that it's 2 years and you would find that a problem, obviously. But it's important to make that distinction, I think, for people, because they're out there listening, thinking that AE has got a big fancy lawyer trying to block you from speaking forever, and that's very damaging to an organization which I don't think had that goal in mind at all.
Could I say something?
Yeah, it's 2 years.
Hello.
Go ahead, Nita.
Yeah, I think that if anybody did harm to the movement, it's A&E in firing Richard Gage. Richard Gage is the face of A&E, and I think what they did was abominable, and I think that a lot of those 80,000 subscribers will agree. And I think that he's being very, very, very nice about it. I think that what A&E did is totally despicable. And, you know, it's like there is no when you're trying to put it on Richard Gage that he's doing something that's harming the movement. No, he's not doing anything that's harming the movement. It's A&E that's doing something that's harming the movement. Okay? I support what Richard Gage is doing, and I'm sure a lot of those 80,000 people will too. And I appreciate what he's been doing.
Question, Dan Hennen.
What's that?
Dan Hennen, question?
Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, I just wanted to a question for Richard, just to clarify, because I found this point interesting, that a press release went out announcing you're no longer with the organization, but are you suggesting that the 80,000 mark email never went out?
Dan, a press release went out announcing that Richard Gage is no longer CEO. It didn't say that he's no longer with the organization.
I see. Okay.
That's
okay.
An important distinction, but you're also correct in that it was not an email to the email subscriber list. It was a press release.
Oh, really? Okay, that's a huge difference. And I don't know if Craig got that part.
That a press release
went out and a mass email did not go out. That I find very interesting. Thanks again for your work, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you.
Carl here with a quick question.
Go ahead, Carl.
Hi. Richard, actually, not so much a question, is pointing out that there was an email, but it was meant to stay below the radar. It was just around the 20th anniversary, and it was the topic was like, well, looking forward, and buried down, you know, below the key bullet points was, oh, Richard Gage, you know, I forget what it says, you're no longer the CEO or what, but it clearly wasn't headlined as that. It was buried. I think I've sent you a link to that. If not, I'll send it to you again.
Yeah, that should have gone out as a headline mass email with that and only that as the topic. I agree.
It was meant to not be noticed the way it was emailed out. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
It also says, should Gage make any statements concerning his employment with AE911 Truth that the organization deems to be inaccurate or to otherwise violate this agreement, Gage shall forfeit any further, says severance, but it means retirement. So it's important to realize that this attorney set up AE911 Truth as the arbiter of any violation on my part, and there's, believe me, tons of gray area here, which I could never comply or hope to comply even with AE911 Truth's interpretation, and they're the arbiter, $10,000 per occurrence, and then forfeit the entire sum, which was as I mentioned, very generous. So I'm grateful for the offer, but it comes at a price that would basically completely constrain me. And so it's better that I'm out here in the movement doing what I do. Now, I'm not going to present myself as being with 1811 Truth. I never have after I left, and I never will. I want to be clear. I've got all kinds of disclaimers on my website about that. But you will find an 911 Truth logo here and there. You will find that I'm asking people to sign the petition over at 911 Truth. You'll find that I'm providing evidence tools like the brochures and the DVDs that people can go buy over at 911 Truth. I am the best friend that 911 Truth ever had out there. On this website, I'm going to be bringing architects and engineers, because I'm setting up right now presentations with architects and architectural associations to tell them about the evidence and to tell them, hey, there's 3,500 architects and engineers signed on to the petition over at AE911 Truth. So it's going to be a very positive outcome if I can, you know, make it work financially, because I've lost at this point about 85% of my income.
Okay, so any other comments or questions?
Well, Carl, one more comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
Richard, far from being bored, I was almost on the edge of my seat when you and Craig were about to delve into an area that's not previously been aired. So, I mean, don't hold back on my account. I'm interested.
Thanks.
Hi, it's
Fern. Wish you success.
Hang on 1 second, Fern. Hang on. I think Carl's not finished. Just hang on 1 second. Carl, are you done?
No, just Richard. Wish you, of course, the greatest of success. I think you are absolutely taking the high road, and bless you.
Thank you, Carl, and I appreciate that.
Okay, and Fern, go ahead.
Yeah. I was part of being at Ground Zero every Saturday, and I know how much flack we received just from sharing the truth of 9/11. So when I'm listening to this conversation, it reminds me of that. And I started with 9/11 when Les Jamison and Wally Rodriguez were on West 86th Street. This is before Richard Gage came into our group. And then we moved to St. Mark's Church. And I remember when Richard Gage came and he handed out these one-page double-sided flyers, papers, which I still have, one side showing the demolitions of the Twin Towers and the other with World Trade Center Building 7. And each time, every Sunday that Les would have a webinar, it was on a different topic. So I really admire that throughout all of the 20 years that Richard Gage could just focus on the explosion, you know, whatever brought down the Twin Towers and the Building 7, because there are so many other issues connected. So I really just think that it's amazing you could discipline yourself like that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so any other announcements or anything before we call it a night? Richard, again, thank you for your presentation and for that lively discussion. And anybody else, anything? I did want to recommend, as I said earlier, Robert Kennedy Jr.'s book on the real Fauci. He goes into Bill Gates and that and other things too. And I understand that Scott Atlas, who was Trump's advisor on COVID or something, has a book out too where he talks about how there's a lot of corrupt things going on within the government then. Trump not getting the truth from his advisors, et cetera. So that might be kind of interesting. I haven't read it yet, but that's out. All right, well, anything else? Any events? Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll call it a night then. Thank you all for being on, and we'll see you. Our next one is December 29th. So I wanted to ask you, does anyone have any topics or speakers they'd like to recommend or a topic they'd like to hear on the call?
Yeah, I've got one. This is Richard. Kevin
yep.
Ryan. Yeah, Kevin Ryan has done an essay on the parallels between COVID-19 and 9/11. And it's excellent. And Fran Schuer has also done an excellent article on COVID-19 and 9/11 parallels on psychologically, the manipulation of people by fear. So I think it would be an awesome presentation from either or both of those.
Okay, thanks, Richard. That's a great idea. Okay. Yeah, I read Kevin's article on that, and he gave a speech on that last year or something. It was great. Really, really great. So great. That's a good idea. Any others? Any other topics or anyone want to recommend?
Yes. Carl here. Well, as I may have emailed you, Lawrence Guiano. I have his email address. It's actually in the back of his The Unspoken Kennedy Truth book. He has it right on the last page, and he does respond to his emails. So he may very well be interested in coming on as a speaker.
Okay. Yeah, I like him. Did we ever have him on? I think he might have been on a couple years ago.
Really?
I'm not sure. I can't remember.
I may have missed that call before I ever heard of him. Okay.
Oh, you know what? We had him on the Left Forum on a panel. He did it remotely. That's how
Well, he can connect dots from JFK to 9/11 and actually tracing all the way back through some of the scriptural mandates that have driven mm-hmm. the process.
Okay, let's we'll get in touch with him too. That sounds great.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Any other thoughts or? All right. Well, great. Well, then we'll see you all hopefully on the 29th, and maybe we'll have some of these speakers that were just recommended. So everyone, happy holidays, and we'll see you on the 29th. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.